Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome back. We are talking to Dr. Damon Constantinidis.
So I can switch gears. I love being a sex therapist and a sexuality educator because talking about sex is really fun, and it also can be really hard. And so being a therapist, I get to like do both the fun part and the hard part, and they're both really important. And so the thing that is true in the world of sex therapy is that, and it cracks me up, like, okay, so like you'll have like, you know, one of like, there's like a couple like texts that everyone uses on, I'm a little bit of a nerd, so I know a lot about books. So a text on like the sex therapy, and there's always like a chapter on transgender. And so like, I will like, you know, be like, really, oh, what are they going to tell me about working with my trans folks around sex? And I'll like open it up and it'll be like, transgender is about gender identity, blah, 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 transition, blah. It's like never about sex. It's like trans people don't have sex or are not sexual, which is fascinating because, historically, transgender people were seen, well, so, okay, so a good person to read about all of this stuff is Julia Serrano, who, like, writes some amazing, she wrote this book, The Whipping Girl, and writes some amazing things around how trans people have been over-sexualized in the media, but in the medical profession, they've been hyposexualized. So, like, the idea that, like way back in the day, if you wanted to transition, if you were, and it was usually trans women, so people who were born male and transitioning to be a woman, and they wanted to have surgery, and you had to you had to get a divorce and cut off all ties with your family, and you were pretty much considered asexual. So the surgery wasn't necessarily really concerned about whether or not you could have an orgasm or have a good sex life, because like why would a freak like you want to have sex, right? Like that was kind of like the medicalized version. I mean, that you're not going to find that quote anywhere, but, and so I feel like in some ways the field of sexology has kind of carried that legacy. And so when somebody get like the people that are writing about it often focus not on transsexuality, but on gender, which, you know, we've talked about gender identity and what that is. And it's like gender identity is really different than like sexual pleasure, right? Like those are two really different things. So, yeah, one of the things that I'm really into, like, writing about and talking about and working with clients about is how people who have gender-variant identities can also have really satisfying sexual experiences. And, in fact, I'm co-authoring a chapter in a women's sexuality textbook that's about trans sex, and it's been a really interesting experience because like as like the chapter started to develop and like I'm working with a co-author and like we were just doing like all of this like history of trans blah, 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 and I was like no, people can read another book if they want the history of trans. I want to write a chapter that's about like trans sexuality. Like yes, there's like 12 studies out there, but let's at least talk about those 12 studies. There won't be any more unless people start talking about those ones. And my dissertation, which was like such an amazing experience to get to do, was on non-binary people, trans people with non-binary gender identities, and how they navigate their gender and their sexuality, so and intimacy and relationships. And so that's also something I do like a lot of thinking and writing about. Yeah.
So now I'm just super curious. So then, like, what's in a sex book for trans people? But
well, I'll be able to answer that question by the end of the month because it's due on October 1st.
Okay.
But basically, and it's specifically, it's a just, and this was also like really a cool experience to get to kind of hash out. So it's a textbook series on women's sexuality. So if you're writing about trans sexuality, what does that include, right? Because so here's the thing. It definitely includes trans women, clearly, right? But does it But what about people who are non-binary identified? Does it include their sexuality? What if, and it's for psychologists. So what if you get somebody in your office who's trans and, I mean, like, it just is really complicated. So what the thing that is not in the book is stuff around trans men who identify as trans men and identify with a binary gender identity of man. They are not in a book on women's sexuality. I mean, what this particular, you know, book is doing is looking at the literature, and the literature tends to focus on, for trans women and non-binary gender identities, tends to focus on kind of like the nuts and bolts, like orgasm after surgery. So now we do have those studies, which is really cool, because like 60 years ago, we didn't even think about it.
So what do we know about that?
One of the studies, and so I'm not gonna be able to like tell you like who or like
yeah,
who
you don't
okay so like one of the studies that I thought was really interesting around transsexuality was that and this actually did look at trans men and trans women, but the part that will be in the chapter will be about the trans women, but both trans men and trans women said that they experienced a difference in their orgasm after they had like sexual reassignment surgery or gender affirmation surgery, or gender reassignment surgery. Those are three terms for the same thing. And so, that trans women describe their orgasms as, being, longer and multiple and less intense, and trans men describe them as being faster and more intense, which like what we know about female and male orgasm, it's like it seems like there was a shift that went towards the other gender, which I just find really interesting, because like, is that about, and this is why it becomes hard to research, is that about the surgery? Is that about hormones? Or is that about gender identity? Like, do our orgasms, how we interpret our orgasm, is it connected to how we see ourselves, how we see our gender? And how much of that is impacted by like our actual body and body chemistry, and how much of it is impacted by how we see ourselves? That study hasn't been done, but that I think would be really interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting. And then, so we're discussing these, you know, matters of sexuality. And I think that like just sexuality in general and like the mechanics of it are somewhat mysterious to some people. I mean, people have varying levels of familiarity with their own anatomy and like what is pleasurable to them and whether they feel, you know, comfortable knowing about the details of that. And one of the things about female sexuality is the discussion of like different types of orgasms and what is the right way to feel pleasure and things with clitoral stimulation versus vaginal stimulation and stuff like that. So for somebody who has transitioned, what would be the issues around that? I mean, is it compounded? Is it just you switch to, I mean, what's the situation?
So, I mean, I feel like, so I feel like before I answer the question, I want to say that this is an awesome place to talk about that. But in the, like out in the world, I've had so many clients come into my office and be like, I met this like person on the street, and the first thing they asked me about what was in my pants. And it's like, yeah, like we don't like go around and just like ask people on the street, like what's in their pants or like what, like, you know, so I just want to like, you know, have the caveat that like talking, that I feel like lots of times people who are not trans love to go right to like questions about surgery and anatomy and genitals, because I think it's probably easier to think about, like, it's like, and it's also we're like fascinated by surgery in the United States
and
like,
genitals.
So I just want to like make sure folks know that like that question like makes so much sense here, but you know, is not the thing to like ask somebody you don't know. And like
it's inappropriate to ask anyone about
right
what's going
exactly
on
exactly.
And so how's your situation? Although, I mean, there's a lot of like, how's it hanging? So,
I mean,
little bit to the left.
Okay. So the thing about, in my experience as a clinician and a researcher who did a dissertation on transsexuality, like trans folks have so many different experiences with sexuality and their bodies. And so part of what is really complicated is that trans people understand that, well, first of all, people modify their bodies in different ways. And so that's going to impact both how you feel about it and how it works, right? And then also people have such different understandings about their bodies. So I'm going to give you an example. So I'm trying to think about my dissertation where I had like real people so I could talk about real people instead of like making one up. But so some people who identify as transgender men are really uncomfortable with their genitals. You'll hear like a very common term is junk, talking about their junk. In my dissertation, one of the things that like really stuck out was how there's a lack of language for trans people to talk about their genitals, which makes things like confusing and just even harder to like communicate with partners around. But so a trans man that has not had any kind of genital surgery, you know, anatomically has like a clitoris and, you know, a vulva and a vaginal canal, right? And may enjoy or not enjoy all of those parts in any combination or not at all. So some trans guys are really like not comfortable with their genitals, and like they might enjoy sexuality in a different way. And some trans guys are like totally into it and it's fine. People like some guys will conceptualize their clitoris as like a cock, and which if you look at how bodies develop, how a male and female bodies develop, all of our genitals have analogous parts. Mm-hmm. So thinking about a clitoris as a cock is actually pretty right on, because it's the same group of cells that forms a penis that forms a clitoris, which is like why if you think about like if I'm off about this biology, like correct me, but you know, like a penis has so many nerve endings but is less sensitive than a clitoris, which has more nerve endings by square centimeter because it's smaller, right? Like it makes sense they're coming from the same cells.
It has to do with embryonic development and whether mm-hmm. or not you get the right signals to develop mm-hmm. certain things at the right time. And it's actually where matters of intersexuality come up,
right?
Is when the genitals have the capacity and the potential to go either way. Mm-hmm. And then in some situations they do, they go a little bit either way.
Right. And so it makes a lot of sense for a trans man to think about his clit as a penis because it's coming from the same cells. Like that's, and it acts the same way, right? Like we know that like clitoris has become erect, just like penis has become erect. You know, the difference is that urethra doesn't run through it. Right. So like some trans guys will think about it that way. Some trans guys will like penetration and some don't, you know. A common slang term, you know, could be, you know, like I've heard people talk about their tranny bonus hole, right? Like, you know, so it just depends on the person and their sexual attraction and their sexual, like just what they like in general about pleasure, and then like how they feel about their bodies. The other thing is that, you know, taking testosterone, and I'm talking specifically about trans men, right now. So taking testosterone, increases the size of the clitoris and increases sex drive. And so then that can be a different relationship with your body for a trans guy. Those are some of the things that come into play. And I feel like there are so many different options for how people change or don't change their bodies and how they conceptualize and think about their bodies, that there's not like one answer, but that's like how some guys think about it. You know, trans women have similarly have various experiences with their body and with their anatomy. So they may or may not have surgery. They may or may not be taking feminizing hormones, which can reduce sex drive. But there's also this thing that, you know, for some trans women, it might reduce sex drive, but it also might increase their comfort with their body, and then in some ways increase sex drive because they're just feeling more comfortable with their body. Yeah, and so like there's just all these different ways that trans folks think about their bodies and how they work that can change sex for them. I mean, some of the things that I think are like the bottom line, like similar to people who are not trans, is that sexual pleasure is definitely a part of trans folks' lives. And then what becomes different is that we don't have there's not a common language to talk about it in the same way that there is for cisgendered or people who are not trans to talk about their bodies.
And for me, like, the thing that blows my mind is that the amount of self-discovery and thinking about that somebody has to do. Because for the vast majority of people, lacking open communication about sexuality and sexuality education means that they don't really know what they really, really like and how they really, really want to have sex and the way that they will enjoy it the most and feeling free to experiment and feeling free to try different variations of, you know, what you do by yourself or with a partner and, like, how do you integrate toys and how do you feel comfortable with dominance and how do you feel comfortable with all of those things. And that's just, like, a person who doesn't even have to consider how it affects their concept of gender. Like, so it's impressive to me that somebody then is just like, well, I'm going to have to figure this out on my own because the average, like, make your sex life better thing may not necessarily apply to me. Like, if I am a trans man but don't have, like, a penis, like, going and getting a cock ring is going to mean a very different thing. Like, it's not going to be like, oh, it, you know, it just has this thing that makes my erection last longer, or it's a vibrating one and then it feels like that. Like, then it's like an entirely different experience. So I'm just super impressed at the level of, like, adventure. I'm going to go figure this out. Like, and it opens up the opportunity for, like, a much bigger range of expression, because once you've opened that door, perhaps there's, like, just introductions to new ideas. Like, maybe I'm way off. Maybe.
I mean, I think that that's definitely something that I would really want. I'm like, I hope that someday somebody does some research around, because I've heard anecdotally that, like, like trans or just LGBT folks in general, like, are more into, like, different kinds of sex, like kink or BDSM. Than folks who are not trans or LGBT. And so, like, anecdotally, it seems that way. And it is really interesting. It would be really fascinating to find out, like, is that true?
I feel like it's a combination of, once you open a door, like I said, then the idea of opening further doors is a little less scary. But also the idea that you're not as bound by the limitations of what you already know and have experienced because you've just had to bust through it anyway. But being out about anything might make it easier to be out about other things. Like, if you are, like, out and queer, it might be easier to be out about being BDSM.
Maybe.
Maybe.
And see, this is what I want to do research on. Because I want to know if that's true.
Okay.
Or is it just that, like, that there's more community building around LGBT and kink, because you have to have more community building because the mainstream community, like, you can't just, like, be straight and, like you need to kind of build your own community, right? So is it that it's more visible?
Yeah.
Or is it that there's a higher percentage? And
yeah.
And that's what I would love for somebody to, like, do, like, research around, because I don't think we actually know. We can guess the answer to that, but I don't think we actually know the answer to that.
I think one of the weird things is that, like, in a lot of weird is not necessarily the adjective I wanted to use, but in, like, the swinger community, for instance, there we had a discussion with the Delaware Valley Synergy Group and about biphobia when it comes to men.
Right.
But not with women. So, yeah. Like, there is a place where people are very open about mm-hmm. one type of sexuality because they're in open relationships and they don't feel constrained right. to be monogamous, but still have fears of male homosexuality and bisexuality.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then you go to a munch and you go to the BDSM community, and is there, like, a hard line between the groups that are queer-friendly and the groups that are not, and, like,
yeah,
find out things like that.
Yeah.
There's so much to find out. It's just everybody in the whole world. It'd be great. And like, that's a really good point about, like, the community building. Because it'd be like, so at 3 o'clock we'll all meet, we'll talk about our queer stuff, and then those who want to stay afterwards, bring your leather gear, you know? Like,
I would love for somebody to read you Kinsey's study. Like, the Kinsey Report, like, the whole way that they did their original study using this, like, real... They use, like, this... I don't know if you've ever talked about it on the show, but they...
I don't think I have.
They, like, use this really intense and specific way of charting people's answers around their sexuality preferences that, like, was, like... I like, almost thinking about... Almost... You can almost think about it as, like, they had a code, like, another language that they used to, like, code the data. And so it made it, like, anonymous. And I would love for somebody to try to, like, redo the Kinsey report. Like, the kind of, nobody wants to fund that kind of research anymore. But if they did, like, that would be so cool. It would be really cool to see, like, how, like, if it could be replicated, and then if, like, the data was the same, or if it was different, and, like, it would just be, like, really fascinating.
I mean, I feel like a lot of things would be replicated because it was a well-done study, like, from a research standpoint, but so much has changed in the way that America is. Like, for instance, like, the amount of urbanization versus rural living makes a huge difference in people's sexuality. And, like, at the time the study was done, like, the just the understanding of a woman and her choices and her options in life were just different because, like, when the two different books came out, there was just vastly, like, there were two different books. One was on the human male and one was on the human female.
Yeah.
And the response from America was starkly different because, like, the human male, oh, that's interesting, let's talk about that. And farm boys and all. Yeah. And then, like, the woman one came out and they're like, you can't study this.
Yeah.
That's filthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go back to biology.
Yeah. That would be different, maybe. Yeah. Maybe not. I don't know. That would be different. It might be exactly the same.
I don't know. Let's go do it. Let's we're going to charge out the door, and we're just going to ask everyone in the world if they want to be in our study. All right. So getting back to you as a therapist, you have a website where people can find you if they are looking to talk to somebody about whatever.
Because
we've clearly established that you are willing to talk to them about a variety of things. They're sexual issues, they're just personal, mental health status, like, whatever.
Yeah. So my website is therapistdamon.com. And I try to post, like, a weekly blog on there. My blog tends to be about mindfulness and mental health. So I tend to kind of focus on, like, the idea that if we can be present, we feel better. And so it's one of, like, the ways that I think about the work that I do. I also have, like, a whole bunch of, like, links on that website, both for mental health information and also for information about both local and national trans resources and LGBT resources. And one of the things that I haven't talked about today that I LGBT parents and parents of LGBT kids, and those are two things that I've worked with folks around parenting issues, and so there's some resources for parents on the website as well. So it's kind of got a whole bunch of stuff.
And you're also an educator, so you're going to be teaching some classes coming up at the William Way Center, right?
Yeah, I'm part of the Way Gay University this semester.
Are you there?
And I'm doing a class on dating, which has, like, a really, it has a dumb title.
Did you come up with it?
I did. Sometimes I'm like, really? I came up with that? That's awful. It's how to find the love that you want and have fun doing it. So it's a dumb title. But what's going to be really cool is it happens on Tuesday night for 3 weeks in a row. So I'm hoping that it gives us a chance as like a small group to really like work together to both help people figure out like what they, to some extent, like what they want. And then also talk about like some really like concrete things about dating and sexuality and being, you know, LGBT or an ally, like part of that bigger community and what that means for your sexuality and for dating. It came out of just working with so many people who feel so lonely and who feel like they just either don't know how to not like how to find who they're looking for or that they can't. And it's like, I love my job, but in so many ways I'm like a secret keeper. And so, which I think is really important because we all need a secret keeper in our lives. But I feel like doing some of these like education things is a way for me to kind of take that energy and like use it to give other people like resources to, yeah. So anyway, I think it'll be really fun. It's gonna be about dating. It's if people are interested in checking it out, you have to go to the William Way website, which is waygay.org. There's information on there about like registration. And the first class is October 4th. So I think it'll be really fun. I'm really excited. So often the education stuff I do is much more about, I do a lot of stuff for like college classes about LGBT 101 or gender identity or, you know, which is really fun, but not as much fun as talking about sex and dating. I mean, come on.
That's why I do it. Absolutely. Right on. So, anything else you want to make sure people know about, either you, your practice or, being mindful and self-care stuff? Anything you want?
I guess the last, I would like to put out there, that, and this is, so one of the things that has been true in the Philadelphia, queer community is that there have been like in the last like year a couple like big losses, like people taking their own lives, and that really sucks. And so I really want to just put out there to folks that they're like there are like resources and there are people, and if you like ever like want to be hooked up with like other people or resources, like hit me up on my website. I feel like one of the reasons why I went into the field that I did was so that I could have a voice. And so I'm trying to like use that voice to just remind people to like check in with your friends and pay attention to your community and reach out to people when you need to. And I know that sounds really corny, but that's my job, to be corny, and I do it well. So yeah, I think I just like feel like it's important to say that when we can.
Yeah, the whole field of therapy, I think, should be open as an option for people, as you know, like we should freely discuss the fact that it's okay to seek help.
Yeah.
You don't have to know the answer to every question.
And sometimes I feel like, I mean, always I feel like it's so much because people are always like, I'm weak if I need help, and it's like, okay, so first of all, that's like a bunch of sexist bullshit, right? And then second of all, I feel like really asking for what you need is really, it takes a lot of strength and courage. So,
brilliant. Very well done. Well, I just want to absolutely thank the amazing Dr. Damon Constantinides. I said it wrong for years. I don't know what's wrong with me, but check him out at therapistdamon.com. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And so thank you so very much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
And thanks for listening. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.